American made, but a large Chevrolet. My mama taught me wrong from right. I was born in the South. Sometimes I have a big mouth when I see something that I don't like. I gotta say it.
And this is Michelle Morin here on AM 740 KVOR. This is the After Hours podcast of the Michelle Morin Show. And Jason joins me a lot more on this program. We talk about all the things that big media won't tell you that I didn't have time to talk about on the live on-air broadcast on my Sunday night show from 9 to 11 p.m. It's August 27th, and we're just going to jump right into it. There's so much this week. I have so much information. I don't even think I have the resource of energy to talk about it all, but we're going to try to cover the highlights. It's the racism. That's the new thing. The left's efforts to divide this country are coming to a head. Antifa, on my live show, I talked about Antifa issuing a press release and their revolutionary abolitionist movement, CEL, that's forming in Philadelphia, is basically calling for an outright revolution. And I had a question on my live show about, they talk about how mosques, this is about what's supposedly going on in the United States. They have a press release saying mosques are being ruthlessly bombed. State agencies and vigilante groups are deporting Latino people with relentless vigor. LGBTQ people are being battered, and the destruction of black life continues unabated as millions languish in the plantations of the modern-day slave system. On my live show, I asked the question, what are the plantations of the modern-day slave system? And after my show was over, I got the answer. Let's go back over here. I'm searching through my sources here. Basically, this comes from teaparty.org.
Wait a minute. It comes from teaparty.org?
More research.
Okay.
More. And I'm sorry. The actual source is BizPack Review. I like to give sources because I'm not just, you know, making stuff up here. So some more research. If you look into their website, turns out that the 21st century slavery is actually referring to the United States prison system. They're saying that they're going to use the funds that they raised to create an underground railroad to help people escape the state. Basically, help criminals escape the prison system because this group believes that, quote, the Civil War was never resolved and the system of slavery transitioned into the prison industrial complex, end quote. So,
is it illegal to break people out of prison?
It is.
And they declared that they were going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just want to make sure that way when all these people are arrested and thrown into jail.
Well, remember that there's a movement to ask the White House to deem Antifa as a terrorist group now.
Yeah, because that seems like a terrorist thing to do.
It is. And their means are very illegal, and they're going to hurt people. They've already started hurting people. So, yeah, I don't know what Trump's going to do, but we'll see.
Yeah.
This stuff's real. All right, so that's a little bit of an update from the live show. We're going to switch gears and talk specifically about the First Amendment. You know how I call it Kaepernick? Jason says I'm wrong. Football player.
I like your pronunciation, though, because I don't like the man, so you can pronounce it however you want.
Well, it's Kaepernick. And what team does he play on, Jason?
He played on the San Francisco 49ers.
Okay. Well, you know how his trend was to bow down during the national anthem.
Oh, he would kneel.
Kneel.
Yeah,
sorry.
I don't think he was bowing down. He
it's
was kneeling.
Late. It's late. I'm getting my... I just did 2 hours live, and I'm tired. All right, he kneeled during the national anthem.
To disrespect the national anthem and the flag.
Yeah.
Because he was upset about the Black Lives Matter, or he was upset about the black movement in America, how they're being mistreated.
Racism.
Essentially.
Which, I look at that and I see him getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in
millions
this country to play, and he's thinking that he and his race are underprivileged. Give me a break. I don't make that much. Where's my white privilege?
And then to add a layer on top of that, just because it bothers me personally, he was never a part of the group he pretends to be a part of. He came from a wealthy family.
Oh.
And he makes millions of dollars. He made millions of dollars. And what part of his life was hard in any part? No, none of that. He doesn't understand. And he says, no, white people don't understand. No, sir, you don't.
He's just looking for an excuse to be a racist.
His privilege, yeah. Because he's black, so it's just inherent in him.
Let's start the new narrative about the black privilege. Ooh. I don't think that's going to fly.
I don't think that would fly. Well, considering that we have white privilege that encompasses the solar system now.
The solar system.
I didn't even know that before tonight. So,
right.
I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Right. Well, there's the background to the story I'm going to tell you about now. This is bad news. So you've got Kaepernick kneeling.
Kaepernick.
What's that?
Kaepernick.
Kaepernick. Oh, no, you're going to confuse me. I'm not going to know how to pronounce it. Kneeling in protest of the national anthem. And this last week, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that a high school coach, Joe Kennedy, kneeled and prayed on the 50-yard line immediately after games while in view of students and parents. And because he spoke as a public employee, not as a private citizen, his speech was constitutionally unprotected. Hence, he could be fired for what he did.
So, okay. So the BS detail that they want to throw in there is he's a public servant.
Yep.
So they're going to throw the whole separation of church and state out there. That's essentially what I'm gathering from that.
Well,
they're trying to throw that on there.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
And he served as an assistant coach at Bremerton High School from 2008 to 2015. He was ordered to refrain from bowing his head, taking a knee, or doing anything that could be perceived as praying on public school property. You know, it's not like he was leading people in prayer. He was just doing it himself. Well, and he would take a knee, bow his head, thank God for a good game, and then went about his business as a coach.
What bothers me, another thing that bothers me about that story that was written about it, is he did it in public view. They're framing it like it was a disgusting act that he did in public view. Mm-hmm. Really? Okay. Praying is a disgusting act you cannot do.
Well, my question is, so I guess public employees are now beholden to the state, and they can't hold personal convictions?
They're not allowed to, yeah.
They can't say it, so they have to make a choice? Very discouraging, and this is, of course, it's going to have ramifications for all football games, sporting events on public property, and it's not going to stay there. It's going to reach
along those lines.
All coaches.
I want them to go back through. There was plenty of college students who were playing football who knelt with Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
How many coaches? Because I mean, officially, coaches are part of a public servants. They're when they work for the school.
Well, I think the argument is being made that Kaepernick was employed by a private entity.
Well, I know. I mean, Kaepernick aside, he's allowed to, but there was plenty of college students and college coaches. And I guarantee you a college coach knelt.
Yes.
Find that. If you're going to get someone for praying, do it on the other side as well. If you're going to go crazy and ballistic and just nonsense,
it is.
Do it on both sides.
It is. Interestingly enough, Rasmussen Polling did a poll. It turns out that 85% of Americans, 9 out of 10, think free speech is more important than political correctness. And 73%, according to this poll, say they would defend free speech to their deaths. Is that interesting? And we were just talking about asking the question on these monuments. The question was asked on my Facebook page. Let's think about this. People are tearing down monuments that belong to our history. And for good or for better or worse, the monuments, the people that are tearing the monuments down are part of our American history. Now they've started with the Confederate guys, and now they're threatening to take down our founding fathers. And the question I was asked, and I just kind of throw this out, I think we need to be thinking about it, is, how far will you or I go to defend these statues? And it's a very good question.
Where are you going to draw the line?
Where will we draw the line? I'm not so sure that America's going to put up with this for too much longer. I'm not convinced of it. I'm starting to see, you know, just in different little corners, people are starting to stand up to the nonsense. And you can only poke at the silent majority of America for so long. I mean, we're a very patient nation. We're very patient people. And you've got Antifa, Black Lives Matter, everybody. Everybody's just, you know, poking, you know, if you don't toe the line, you're a Nazi, you're a racist, yada, yada, yada. And we're going to start, you know, and they're going to start increasing violence, as we found out from Antifa. Everybody's increasing the violence on the left. Everybody. We've got a congressman who got shot and many, many more who could have been. And it's just, we're not going to roll over forever. And I just know that.
We can't, because, no. I mean, it's almost encouraging to them when we don't do anything.
It is.
They know that they will not have any repercussions for anything they do.
They're banking on it.
Yep.
Well, shouldn't push too hard, because there will be pushback at some point. And, you know, Jason, you were saying they're counting on the white supremacists to rise up and start, you know, just like what they did in Charlottesville.
They're counting on Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. That's what they're counting on, because then they can lump us all in with the Nazis and the white supremacists.
Yeah.
You're all down there protecting the monuments. You're all racist. It's like, no, that group was racist. No, we're not.
They're going to prove it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So Rasmussen is basically finding out that people aren't putting up with this. They're pushing us to a corner that isn't. We're not going to stay there long. According to Rasmussen, 73% agree with the famous line by 18th century French author Voltaire: "I disapprove of what you say, but will defend to the death your right to say it." 10% disagree with that statement, and 17% were undecided. Now, among the Americans who agree with Voltaire, 93% rate freedom of speech as more important than making sure no one is offended. So, freedom of speech is in, and we aren't liking people telling us that, you know, we can't say what we want to say, we can't believe what we want
to
believe.
You're not allowed to have your own opinions because it offends me.
Right, the offense thing.
It's ridiculous.
The reality is going to kick in soon. I don't know how it's going to manifest, but we're kind of at a place in our history now, which my generation could talk about seeing this coming, but now that it's here, it's still kind of, wow, this is surreal, the false narratives flying around trying to stir up people against each other. That's incredible. To me, that's an incredible dynamic, when you can stir up lies and get people fighting. It's just incredible. But what the left is trying to do is open the door for big government, Marxism, whatever. Whatever movement can move in. I mean, we're under assault by, you know, Islamic Jihad, Antifa, the communists, Black Lives Matter. All the little leftist groups are seizing the opportunity. And, you know, when one starts conflict and starting the division, the others can join in or just kind of wait and poke and prod. But it's going to be interesting in the history books what happens with all of this. I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but what's on the line is our constitutional republic. And if we don't stand up and fight for it, we aren't going to recognize this country in a few decades at all. I'm not even going to make a prediction, because I don't know where we're going to land on this. I just know you can't push good people forever.
I hope. I'm going to make a prediction. Common sense will prevail.
Common sense will prevail. I like that. I like that. Now, speaking of the monuments, let's play the audio from Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz. He was on Fox News last week on Fox and Friends, and he's answering a question about this whole bringing down the monuments thing. I think he's got an interesting take on it, and he mentions this has happened before in history, so let's play that.
Look, we have to use this as an educational moment. We have to take some of the statues that were put up more recently, for example, during the Civil Rights Movement, and perhaps move them to museums where they can be used to teach young students about how statues are intended sometimes for bad purposes, to glorify negatives and to hold back positive developments. But the idea of willy-nilly going through and doing what Stalin did, just erasing history and rewriting it to serve current purposes, does pose a danger. And it poses a danger of educational malpractice, of missing opportunities to educate people, and of going too far.
There you have it. So erasing history is a dangerous, dangerous thing to do. And Jason and I had this discussion a couple hours ago about taking down the Confederate statues, what they mean, and all of that. And I think the bottom line is, you start erasing history, you can't learn from it anymore. And our nation, it is the most exceptional nation in history. It's not, we aren't without our dirty laundry as a nation. And certainly slavery was a horrible stain on the nation. However, we're the only nation in all of history who went to war with ourselves, against ourselves, to obliterate it. And that is really, really critical in history. That's critical in learning. It's critical that, and these idiots that are pulling the statues down, they couldn't even hold this discussion with us. They can't hold an intellectual discussion about it. They don't want to. They are the useful idiots that the left counts on to keep this division going. But we fought slavery, we fought ourselves, and we obliterated it. It wasn't easy. People died. People died. And I think that's extremely important and worth knowing. And I don't think our kids aren't learning about it in the public schools. We need to know that it was worth going to the battlefield to get rid of this, because you can't have a free nation, you can't have a free people if one race is set aside as property.
As property.
You just can't. And we, the American people, historically obliterated it. And it's important that we go back through that history and learn from it.
And I just want to add to that.
Go ahead,
His
Jason.
Conversation was, if you start erasing history and rewriting it, that's just what Lenin did.
Stalin.
My view on that is, monuments are, in general, in my opinion, put up to celebrate an occasion, celebrate a person. You get a statue made, that's a celebration. Oh, great. I don't want to celebrate that part of my history. I don't want to ignore it. I don't want to erase it. I think the problem is our education system is doing that. So it's not the fault of the monuments. They shouldn't be the only representation of that conflict.
Yeah.
It should be in textbooks. It should be taught. But it's not. And so we're relying on these monuments to hopefully, maybe if I go to the South, I can see it and be reminded of that.
Yeah.
That's not the way you should be learning about it, through a statue of Robert E. Lee.
Yeah. So you're saying your premise is that and it's probably what they want the premise to be, is these celebrations are, or I'm sorry, these monuments are a celebration.
I'm saying they could be, and in my view, they are. And I equate it to, would you go to Germany and see a statue of Hitler? There's no way they're going to erect a statue of Hitler or keep a statue of Hitler there, even though it is a huge part of their history.
That's interesting. We should look and see if there are any statues of Hitler in Germany.
They don't. The place where Hitler was killed and died, they paved over it and made it into a parking lot. There's nothing there. They don't want anything to do with Hitler. And I can understand that.
Yeah.
They don't even want to remember him. But he's notorious and no one forgot Hitler, even though there's not a statue or a monument to him.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying, maybe not erect statues to the people, like Robert E. Lee. Sure, take that one down, put it in a museum. Keep the ones that are there for the slaves that died.
Yeah.
That's respectable, and I can agree with that. Those need to stay there.
The difference, though, I'm seeing here is with Hitler, and in Europe, there was no civil war. There was no pushback. There was no significant pushback that defeated him. It was outsiders coming in and doing that.
Great Britain was there. Are you telling me Great Britain and Poland weren't there to help stop?
Yeah.
It was a huge, I'm trying to equate a huge event. And we're, instead of recognizing and celebrating the people, especially the people on the wrong side of the event, we should celebrate the people who lived through it and the victims who survived it.
All right.
We have the Holocaust Museum. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
We need to have that. We need to have a place to go and see the atrocities. We need to have monuments for the slavery in the South and see how terrible it was. We don't need a monument to celebrate the man who was killing other Americans, frankly.
True. Well, I'm going to split with you on that one.
Okay.
I want the history. I want the history? I want it up there, and I want to see it, and I want to be reminded of it.
I'm not saying take it down and throw it away. Mm-hmm. Take it and put it into a Confederate museum. You can put Robert E. Lee and the Confederate flag and everything else in there.
Oh, wow.
Don't get rid of it.
Oh, wow. I don't think that would go up well right now.
Don't get rid of it.
I don't think that would
Keep
go
it.
Up right now.
Red.
Okay. We're going to go back to Antifa simply because I want you to hear what some of the Antifa protesters are saying. We got some audio from... I had not seen this reporter before. His name is Austin Fleckus Fletcher. And he went on the streets of Laguna Beach, California, and he was trying to kind of blend in to protest Trump. There was a protest against Trump and the so-called alt-right. And this Fleckus was interviewing with a microphone the Antifa. And I just want you to hear, well, I don't know if it was the Antifa, Jason, or was it just people supporting? It was just leftists. And do I dare ask you to describe one of the interviewees?
You know what? Because this show is equal opportunity, you talked about the Women's March and the pussy hats.
Yeah. Oh.
The cat hats.
Don't even say it.
There's a gentleman who decided to wear a men's genitalia hat.
There you go.
On his head?
On his head.
So, yeah, you know what? Equal opportunity. If women could wear the cat hats, he could wear his hat.
Thank you. All right. I asked Jason to please describe that because I just couldn't do it. But in this audio you're going to hear, the guy with the male genitalia hat he's probably the one that talks the most. And if you see it, it will disturb you in a way that, you know, you want to laugh and you want to just kind of throw something at the screen too. But just listen to these brave millennials talk about Antifa and the alt-right. Let's just hear some of the speak going on by these people. It's disturbing.
Did any Nazis show up on the other side?
You know, they've been walking around. I've seen a couple. You know,
actual Nazis?
Who knows what they are? All I know is they're talking race hate.
What are some of the things they're saying that makes you think they might be Nazis?
What makes them think that? Well, they're talking race hate. And I didn't say they were Nazis. That's just the atmosphere of today.
Very cool. What are some of the things you're hearing that are racist and inappropriate?
You name it, they said it.
Is it something that happened tonight or just in general?
Tonight, today. Yeah, today.
So the alt-right, I would call it a loose connection of this new wave of right-wing sort of, not radicals, but they have a strong emphasis on white supremacy is what I would say. Or maybe not even white supremacy, but more capitalism.
Ah, cut the tape for just a second. So you heard the first guy try to explain all the racist things he'd heard, explain all about all the Nazis he's seen. They have nothing. These are just useful idiots out there, and they have no substance whatsoever. I wouldn't even start to guess why they're there. I don't know if they're getting paid, if they just have no purpose in life, whatever it is, but they're not the brightest bulbs on the tree. That's for sure. But
they were there to fight the racists. You
didn't
hear
him? They were there to fight the racists.
They were all over the place.
He, you know what? The last guy said it. It's not about racism. It's about hating capitalism.
Capitalism. Well, you know, racism, capitalism, it's the same thing.
Right?
Really?
Do we have any more audio from that?
No, we do not.
We didn't get to hear from the guy who has the goofy hat. We won't describe that in any more depth. But I just wanted you to hear what some of these people are saying. When we had the Donald Trump rally here in the Springs, we had actual Antifa, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 of them. And I went and talked to them, and they were very scripted. They weren't like these people that we just heard from. I don't know where these guys came from. The people I talked to had definitely gone into training, and they had their little guidebook. They even gave me one. I still have it. If they're listening, I still have it. It's a little memento I've kept
from
the event.
Their plan is working. They're going to indoctrinate you slowly.
They are. So And we have some more audio I want you to hear about. Venezuela. Golly, my heart breaks about Venezuela. They've got Maduro over there, and he's just living it up, dancing on TV for the people. These people are starving. They're not getting medical care.
Just for background, what's going on in Venezuela? For people who don't know what's happening.
For people who don't know what's going on in Venezuela, it basically is the result. It is now an economically collapsed society. It's got some of the richest oil reserves in the world. But because Maduro and, oh gosh, who was before him? It's the guy before him, the dictator.
The leader before him, yeah.
Yeah, Hugo. I'm sorry.
Hugo Chavez?
No.
No, I'll say that's Cuba. That's Cuba.
No, it's late. It's very late. My memory cells.
The last two dictators.
Yes. Turn it into a socialist country with a dictator. And women are turning to prostitution. People can't find jobs. Inflation is up. There's not food on the shelves. People have to get into food lines to get food from the government. It's like it's rationed and subsidized. And the women who have infants, there's no baby formula. So the women nurse their babies, and they really can't because they're so malnourished. They're turning to donkey milk to feed newborns. And they're saying the statistics are 4 children per week starve to death now in Venezuela. They're not getting medical attention. People are losing weight. 75% of Venezuelans have lost at least 19 pounds in 2016. 93% of Venezuelans said they don't have the money to secure 3 meals a day for themselves. The lack of food has led them to refer to the starvation currently taking place, and it's called the Maduro diet because
the leader.
Dictator is Nicolas Maduro.
And it's not only that they can't buy the food, there's no food to buy.
No. There are cases of people breaking into the zoo and stealing animals to eat to combat their hunger. And these people, this is horrible. They've got rich reserves that they could have a thriving economy, but because the socialist and the dictator won't allow capitalism to be there, these people are suffering.
Well, no, because everyone has to be on equal footing, right?
So yes.
Everyone has. When everyone's equal, you lower the bar until everyone's equal.
So I've got if you want to look into more detail, look for the Guardian's article. There's the Guardian talks about how hunger is eating away at Venezuela as the people struggle to survive. 3/4 of them have lost weight. 9 out of 10 homes can't cover the cost of what they should eat. Maduro says that Venezuela's problems are the result of economic warfare waged by guess who?
Of course, America, right?
America.
Or Trump specifically, probably.
Yep. He points to Trump's public mulling of a military option earlier this month as evidence that Washington is pushing for regime change and ramped up sanctions against the government and the state-owned oil corporation as an overt bid to undermine the government by forcing it to default on debt. He's blaming all his problems on you and me and Trump. And it's so sad. There, if you read the article, when they were prosperous, young people were planning on becoming successful and having careers, and then it just all came to a screeching halt. Now they can't even figure out how to put food on the table. So we've got some audio from Ami Horowitz. He goes to the streets here in America, and he talks to students,
It looked like he was looking for 20-somethings, like millennials, young millennials, like college-age students.
I would say millennials. And he starts the video out by asking the question, how important is income equality for you? Every single person he talked to, oh, yeah, it's really important. Oh, I think this is, it's really important. And they all agreed that income equality is important. And we're going to bring you into the audio after that when he goes into more depth and starts asking them, well, would you like to have such good income equality that you earn in Venezuela? And I'm just going to let him carry it. So, Jason, play that audio and let's hear what American millennials, not all of them, but at least these millennials, believe about capitalism and income equality in Venezuela. Capitalism in America versus income equality in Venezuela.
Okay, so clearly income equality is a value. I wonder what country we should model ourselves after. As I explained to them, Venezuela is in the middle of an economic crisis with food shortages, day-long lines for basic necessities, and massive violence. This is what income equality looks like. Sweet. Venezuela obviously is in the news a lot now because of all the economic issues that are occurring there, as we know. Mm-hmm. The lines of food and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But here's the upside. So Bernie Sanders gave a speech about how Venezuela is very income equal. Even though there's some downside, mm-hmm. there's some violence there and yes. there's food lines, but still everybody has to do the same thing, mm-hmm. wait in line equally.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, a fair system.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Even though they've got all the food lines and stuff, that's still, it's more important that they're income equal, correct?
Yes.
You? Okay.
And I think they do a very good job.
Should we model ourselves more like a Venezuela to become more income equal?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, economically, it would be nice because it would be even for all.
I do think that we should model after them, and I do think that we should look at what they're doing.
I feel like that would be a better plan.
Than
like,
what we have today in America.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like...
As an Hispanic, you have a good sense of that stuff.
Yeah.
If we all give a little bit, you know, and become a little bit more socialist, that's how we do it, you know?
Oh. If you got to wait in line for stuff, we should all wait in line together.
Right.
Essentially.
We all have less, mm-hmm. everybody has more.
Can think of it like that.
A lot like the rest of the world, which is a lot more dignified than us.
And is it fair to say that our economic model shouldn't be about stats, but more about feelings and personal stuff, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Viva la Venezuela.
Viva la Venezuela.
Oh, my gosh. I normally will cut into these audios and just say something because I'm flabbergasted. I am so flabbergasted, I'm speechless as I just listen to it over and over and over again.
And I like how he opened the question or the response with Bernie Sanders thinks. And so, of course, all these guys are like, well, if Bernie thinks that, then of course.
Oh, my God.
He knows what he's talking about. No.
Yeah.
You don't lower the bar to make everyone equal. You raise the bar and everyone will aim for the bar.
That's capitalism.
Yes.
You're painting the picture that I was just going to say. Margaret Thatcher talked a lot about this very simple difference and how socialism is bringing everyone down to the lowest bar so that we're all equal, whereas capitalism allows you to raise the bar as high as you want.
Yeah.
They agree. I'm just going to say the old cliche, well, they need to go live in Venezuela. I mean, really.
I wish.
And when they're on their way, I would like them to take some food. And it's not for them. I want them to donate it to the first family they reach and meet. And the American going down there, millennial, who believes this is so great, can't have any. They need to go stand in line and give food to these hungry people.
Yeah. See, I would be afraid that it would be just like the North Korea situation.
Yes.
Any Western person who goes over to North Korea, they only show you the best part.
I know.
They would bring you through like, oh, look at these people. They're not starving. They will show you the rich people who are privileged to have all the food. They won't show you the other 99% of people who are starving.
Yeah. That's just a travesty. It pains me that here we are, you know, we're able to still function in this and they're down there just starving and no one can help them because they're ruled by a tyrant. It's heartbreaking. That's why I love America. I love capitalism. And I am not racist.
Oh, you're a racist. Capitalism is racist.
All right, we're going to switch gears here. One last topic tonight. A first grader got sent to the office. California Charter School investigated a first grader because the first grader came across a kindergartner classmate on the playground. I'm not sure which. She called the student by the given name of the child. But apparently didn't know that the boy was now identified as a girl and got investigated.
Wait a minute. So she called him by his old name?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so because she used his old name, not his new girl name?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So you get in trouble for using the wrong... Well, if I ever call you anything other than Michelle, please don't report me to anyone.
I know. And do you remember being a kid and getting in trouble, even for like this minor thing? And it just...
It's the end of the world.
It was the end of the world.
Yeah, you're gonna get in trouble. Your mom's going to hate you forever. Yes. Your parents are going to disown you.
I mean,
everything.
I remember just the adrenaline and the shaky. I mean, for anything.
Yeah.
And I've never forgotten these little things. You know, I'd get in trouble for, you know, something...
Something minor.
Yeah, dropping my pencil on the floor or something. You know, whatever it was. And you don't forget those things. Can you imagine being traumatized as a kindergartner or a first grader?
By using the wrong name.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even the wrong...
It's not even intentional.
No.
It's not like she was making fun of him in any way.
No.
She just didn't know. Oh, his name is this now.
Well, at Rockland Academy, there was a kindergarten teacher who led an in-class discussion on transgenderism.
Oh, that's child abuse.
I know. It is child abuse. And read a book. Let's see. What was the book? I Am Jazz. That's one of the new transgender books that they're reading to kids. I Am Jazz.
It's aimed at children?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lord.
It's about a teen who was born a boy but was allowed to transition as a girl. This is two kindergartners. Five, six-year-olds. Yeah. Little kids who are just going to school.
They don't even know what's going on, let alone they need to figure out if they're a boy or a girl.
I know. They don't
that
even
is
know
ridiculous.
Their parts are really that different.
They're they're so invested in other things, they don't even know or care about that right now. But we're making them aware of it.
So, yeah, and parents were pretty furious.
Yeah.
And they were not allowed to opt out. They weren't
allowed really?
To opt out. Nope.
Were they notified that it was going to happen?
Nope.
Of course not. Why would we let them know?
Nope.
That is, if I was a parent, I would sue.
Nope. Now back to that first grader. The fact that a first grader was investigated is
ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. She investigated by the principal to determine whether or not she had bullied the transgender child.
Oh, give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
As an adult, I wouldn't even imagine that would happen, let alone a first grader who doesn't know better.
Now, it says here that after an hour, it was determined...
Of interrogation?
Yeah. That she made an honest mistake and was not punished or reprimanded.
That takes me 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You ask her, and she says, no, I thought it was this person. Okay, you're good.
Mm-hmm. Of course, she went home crying.
Yeah.
And...
Traumatized.
Yeah. So this is the new norm. Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
This isn't even at a charter school.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what's going on in our schools. I'm telling you, nobody likes to hear this. Public schools are communist in nature. They are publicly owned, publicly run. This is what you get when the state runs a school. And it's not, even if it was the Department of Education, you know, when Cruz ran for president, one of the things I loved was he was going to eliminate the Department of Education. Why was he going to do that? Because the federal government's role is not that of educating the citizenry. It's simply not. So he was going to disband that. And, you know, then it would have been up to the states. Do the states want to support the public schools? That's a state's issue. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But at this point, it's not going that direction. I don't think Trump's going to address it.
He has so much other things he can't even get done, let alone.
I know. And just a reminder, your GOP has still not given us tax reform. Are they on? They're on August recess, aren't they?
Of course they are. The last I read a stat, they only work 138 days out of the year.
Wow.
I wish I had that job. Be getting paid $176,000?
Yeah.
They literally get paid over $1,000 every day.
Oh, my gosh.
That is insane.
That's cushy. That's cushy.
I need to get a job like that.
And we work. Oh, let's just get going on this one. We work every day.
5 days a week.
And we support them.
Yeah. We work 5 days a week, don't get August recess, and we have to pay them their salary.
I know. How dare they call it recess? It's like in your face. We're not playing.
I didn't even think about that. It's recess.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. That's all I've got tonight for the Michelle Morin After Hours podcast this August 27th, 2017. Thanks for tuning in, and please join me every Sunday night from 9 to 11 p.m. here on AM 740 KVOR, because I'm here to tell you what big media won't, and because big media is not doing their job, I could talk all night. Except I'm starting to get tired, and I need to go to sleep now, so... we'll start up again next Sunday, and have a wonderful week. We'll talk soon.